Hey, this is Greg Berger, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Transformers, more than meets the eye. Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons. The Transformers,
robots in disguise.
The Transformers. More than meets the eye. The Transformers.
Many millions of years ago, on the planet Cybertron, life existed. But not life as we know it today. Intelligent robots that could think and feel inhabited the cities. They were called Autobots and Decepticons. But the brutal Decepticons were driven by a single goal, total domination. They set out to destroy the peace-loving Autobots. And a war between the forces of good and evil raged across Cybertron.
Hello and welcome to the TFG1 podcast. It is the year 2012 and we are semi-back. More details on that later. But yes, this is the second voice actor interview for the TFG1 podcast. Michael and I talked with Dan Gilvezan last time, and this time we are talking to none other than Mr. Greg Berger.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this because I've met Greg Berger a couple of times at conventions and such, but I've never really had a chance to sit down and have a lengthy conversation with him. So this will be very cool.
Oh, yes, very much so. And we're going to get right to it.
It is the year 2005. The treacherous Decepticons have conquered the Autobots' home planet of Cybertron. But from secret staging grounds on two of Cybertron's moons, the valiant Autobots prepare to retake their homeland.
Their defenses are broken! Let the slaughter begin!
Dinobots, destroy Devastator!
Me, Grimlock, love challenge! Dinobots transform!
Hello and welcome to the TFG1 podcast. I am one of your hosts, TFG1 Mike, and joining me is Pecan Court Michael. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. And in the latest TFG1 podcast interview, we welcome the voice of Ripcord, Skyfire, Longhaul, Ripto, Hunter, 30 years of voicing Odie, and of course, Grimlock, as along with everything else he's done, Mr. Greg Berger. Hey, Greg, how are you?
Hey, hey, hey. Thanks for having. I only go where I'm invited. Thanks for the invite. I tried going where I wasn't invited, and it didn't work out well at all.
Yeah, no sneaking into places.
Exactly.
I honestly had no clue. Like, I knew you were the voice of Odie or the barking of Odie. You know, when I tell people, oh, voice of Odie, and they're like, what voice? I'm like, well, the dog barks. He's making vocal sounds. So, but I had no idea that you have been Odie for 30 years.
I was part of the original auditions for everything from Garfield on. I got on so well with Jim Davis and everybody else. He told me years later that when I left the room, he said, I don't know what he's going to do on the show, but I want him around. And so obviously I'm incredibly flattered by that. But yeah, I've been in since the first special. And now I just squeaked the mouse on the new show and Harry the Alley Cat and Herman the Mailman. So I'm a good portion of the township.
Cool. Huh. So before we really get started, since I had to fangasm about Odie there for a second, before we get started, can you give us the scoop on what's going on in the world of Greg Berger now? Any upcoming projects that you would like to reveal or that you're actually allowed to reveal?
Well, allowed to reveal is really the key for so many of us now. There's non-disclosure on so many projects that are in the works, understandably so. But I've been given the go-ahead on Transformers Fall of Cybertron. I am in as Grimlock. I'm very proud of the work. I'm very proud of the entire undertaking. And we've just started season 4 of the Garfield Show. So I'm crazy busy. And the Garfield Show puts me back mic to mic with Frank Welker every week. So life is good. Life has been good, stays good, and hopefully continues good.
Awesome. So kind of getting into your background, where did you grow up?
I'm from the middle of the middle, St. Louis, Missouri. In fact, Dan Gilvezan and I wound up in college together in a theater conservatory in the Midwest.
Oh, wow.
Webster College, now Webster University, and we found ourselves on stage quite a bit together, and it's amazing to keep tabs kind of through a lifetime with parallel sort of careers. I really think it was kind of an Archie and Veronica kind of way to grow up and be a kid when I was a kid and a teenager when I was a teenager, and just sort of take careful notes on the world and all of the characters that make up the world. So, yeah, I'm grateful for that, too. I followed sort of a theater course path, and I was always character-wise kind of fascinated by the voice first and foremost. I'm a people watcher from way back, and always got kind of my greatest kind of interest in all of the characters that frequent the world.
Awesome.
It's more fun to play the villainous ones.
Yes.
Get to act all over the place.
Exactly.
Leave it on the scenery.
That's right.
Yeah, the villains always get the best lines.
They really do.
So did you always want to be an actor or a voice actor?
I kind of, I didn't know where I was headed or what I was doing, in fact. And when I went off to school in New York State, I went to Colgate University, and I was an English major, and I had a pal, a very close pal then and now, who was part of the theater wing, and there was a play they were having difficulty casting. He kind of dragged me along because he knew I enjoyed doing dialects and voices and stuff, and I auditioned, and the head of the theater department asked me what I was doing in the English department, and I said I didn't rightly know. He said, continue your interest, but he said, you're the kind of person we love to have around. So I pursued it starting my freshman, end of my freshman year of college. I really had no inkling. But honestly, it still feels fresh and new.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So how did you break into the business? Like, how did you, you know, come up, and how did you get discovered in voice acting?
Well, there's a bunch of things that all were partially responsible. One, I was doing theater in St. Louis with the Repertory Company of St. Louis, which was through the same university, same college that I had gone to. And I just figured that one of my interests was voice, and that people were hiring people for commercials in that town. There were advertising agencies, and I kind of crafted the most ridiculously inane voice demo you can imagine, and I took it around. I credit a lot of my success and anybody's success with a combination of optimistic naivete and just kind of good fortune that comes from hard work. I took it around to agencies, and a guy called me, and he said, when I heard your demo, I knew I had to meet you. So I went and met with him. He said, that's the worst voice demo I've ever heard. Don't ever let anyone else hear that. He said, but you have a very interesting voice, and I may be able to be of some help to you in doing this the right way instead of the wrong way. And in fact, he did. He's one of my heroes. And that got me some radio work in St. Louis. And I guess I've never been comfortable staying in one place forever. So I ventured forth and met with some agents in Chicago, got represented in Chicago, did work in Chicago, felt comfortable enough with that that I took... I acted in a tour that headed for California. While I was here, I continued spending every day off pounding pavement and trying to meet people. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that to get what you want, you got to wake up earlier and stay up later and knock on more doors than everybody else. And every once in a while, somebody answers the door and says, come on in. And honest to goodness, that's kind of the path I took.
Awesome. Very cool. That's probably one of the more interesting answers to that question that we've gotten. We've gotten a lot of interesting answers. Like David Kay said, oh, well, I, you know, instead of getting in trouble for voices, I get paid for them now.
So, well, Welker used to say, well, it was this or college.
I find it interesting that you did all this in the Midwest as opposed to, you know, growing up in L.A. It seems to me that a lot of the voice actors are either in L.A. or they gravitate to L.A.
I gravitated to L.A., but I had a comfort zone in the Midwest cities that I had been in. In fact, I got my SAG card in doing industrial films in St. Louis and Kansas City. There was one of, if you stick around and you ask enough questions and you find out who's doing what, they were actually doing kind of training films for corporations and things, but it was all under a Screen Actors Guild contract, and I was able to put together enough credits to join while I was there. Plus, there was, in those days, a number of theaters that were working. So I've always considered myself a juggler, and I figure the more things that you have in the air at any one moment, the more likely you are to be able to catch one. So, I mean, and frankly, I still do that. I do it with promos and narrations and radio spots and animation and video games and teaching and writing. And, you know, I just, I'm not someone who has ever been comfortable sitting around waiting for the phone to ring, because I think a lot of the people who wait for the phone to ring and look for them spend most of their lives waiting. And I'm just not comfortable with that. I'd rather be doing than waiting.
Yeah.
It kind of doesn't matter what it is you're doing. It just sort of keeps your juices flowing, and you feel like you're on the active list instead of the waiting list.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Because it was, you know, it's like, you know, put as much work into what you're doing versus waiting for something to happen.
Correct.
You know, and that's just the better way to approach life.
That coupled with what I said was kind of an optimistic naivete. You just keep trying to be in the right place when something good is trying to happen.
Yeah. I'm laughing at my title for the next question. The title for the question. This isn't the actual question, but the header here.
Being, are we playing Jeopardy?
No.
Our final Jeopardy question.
No. Title. Being the one dog Frank Welker is not.
It's actually true.
You've been, as I said before, you've been Odie for the past 30 years. You've worked with both Lorenzo Music and Frank Welker as Garfield. Tell us about those experiences.
Two of my best, closest, most talented friends. And when I teach, I talk about Lorenzo Music saying, you know, everybody says, don't even think about animation unless you've got 30 voices or 50 voices or whatever it is. I say, you only need one, but it better be a really, really, really great one. Lorenzo is and was and remains the one and only, you know, that was a voice that the whole world responded to. Frank has given it his own turn and his own spin, and it's a whole new character with complete reverence for everything that came before. But, you know, to have the privilege and pleasure of working with both of them is kind of dream stuff. And I can't talk about the Garfield Show or Garfield and Friends without talking about Jim Davis, without talking about Mark Evanier, without talking about all of the people involved. It's the most get along, get it done family. It's one of the few, becoming fewer shows that insists on being done ensemble style with complete knowledge and confidence that the best work is always collaborative, and it's so much fun to be in that booth. It really truly is, and always has been since the first special. And my God, the longevity of those characters and those stories and that little neighborhood is phenomenal and fantastic.
Well, I can kind of hear it in your voice. You were also Orson, weren't you, in Garfield and Friends?
Well, maybe. Wade, you're afraid of everything made. I've never seen anything like it. You're afraid of the water, afraid of the dark, afraid of the nighttime too. The sun and the shade, I'm really afraid. Wade, what'll we do with you? Yes, I was. Animation is kind of eternal.
This is so awesome. Nice. Yeah, I love the new show, especially that Jason Marsden is normal.
He's having a very good
time. So awesome.
I just think it continues to be a great sandbox to be able to play in.
Yeah, it is.
Very cool. So, transitioning over to your time in G.I. Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your time on the show as Cutter, Ripcord, and Firefly. And was this similar to the ensemble cast on Transformers?
Yes, you've managed to leave out Spirit, who was one of my favorites, with his eagle Freedom and his ongoing battle against Storm Shadow. I did Spirit, I did Cutter, I was always off to the Island of No Return. Ripcord only wanted to jump out of planes, and Firefly just wanted to blow up stuff. I was kind of the new kid on both Transformers and G.I. Joe, and I needed an air traffic controller. I was so busy in those days. There were so many episodes, and it was all happening at the same time. And I had been seen on stage. I knew Wally Burr, the director, whose praises I sing as well. I mean, it. Without trying to be goody-goody, I have so many people in whose debt I am and who I'm just awed by their abilities. Wally had this gift of just absorbing a storyboard and really demanding performances, even though sometimes it was extremely time-consuming, but demanding performances that obviously have lasted for decades. So, you know, he guessed right, and he pumped up those universes, both Transformers and G.I. Joe, which I kind of think of interchangeably because I was so busy jumping from one to the other. But, there was phenomenal talent in the booth, and I hadn't been doing it animation that long, so I just kind of sat and was in awe of the people I was working with. And I'm not undervaluing my contribution. You know, it was a red hot game of jump rope, and I had to jump in and not trip and bring my best game to every session. But my God, what a fantastic place to play and learn at the same time for me.
Nice.
They were golden days. And sometimes there would be very long writers' breaks where they would work on script or factor something new in. So it's astonishing how many people from those days and those two shows are still working and still holding their own and still, for the most part, busy. And again, I think it speaks to, like, really careful casting. And they were putting together a ball team, and they put together really winning seasons on both of those shows. But G.I. Joe, Wally managed to pump up from the other side of the glass everything to these sort of epic battles, and Transformers, the same thing, only the battles were galactic. But it was all the marbles every time, really vocally demanding, but you wanted so much for it to be good and be right and be everything that they envisioned, that everybody just sort of dove in and gave it their all every time.
Nice. So my favorite G.I. Joe figure as a kid was Firefly, because he looked like a gray ninja. Which one was yours?
It was like I said, it's really fun to be the bad guys, and it's fun to be the good guys. I would say if I had to pick, and I hate picking, because there's things I love about every character. But I just think the nobility of spirit and the ongoing battle with Storm Shadow and kind of the moral overtones of good and the dark side and all that stuff, it really appeals to me. But it was also fun to blow stuff up.
And honestly, that voice is like ingrained in my brain because it was my favorite character. And when he was on the show, it was like, oh, this is awesome.
Well, yeah. Now all the original G.I. Joe episodes and Transformer episodes are airing on the Hub, and also my Men in Black. I was Agent K in the animated Men in Black, and those are all airing on the Hub as well.
Shoot him, Jay. I didn't know that.
Shoot him, Jay. He's a cerebro feckaloid. Their brains are in their bottoms. You know where to aim.
That's awesome.
Men in Black 4. Forget Tommy Lee Jones. Greg Berger.
Right, when Tommy Lee retires, we're bringing Greg in to fill his shoes.
I thought those animated episodes were phenomenal storylines as well, and really interesting and hard to resolve in the course of a half hour. I think a lot of them could have been fleshed out into longer form stories. That's how good they were.
Yeah, that was a really well written series. Yep. I really like that one. I didn't know that was you, though. Wow.
They brought me in season 2 and on.
Nice.
Okay. Cool. Very cool.
So you have all the figures of the characters that you've played, right?
Well, I'm gifted with a fair amount of them. I have the ones that I've been given. I wouldn't say I'm a rabid collector, but I really treasure the ones I have. And I've had sort of a secondary life going to conventions around the world and, meeting people face to face who have been incredibly loyal through fandom. And it's great to meet people one-on-one. It's great to do Q&As. It's great to stay in touch. It's great to know how receptive a lot of the producers have been to fan demand. The fans are unbelievable. And social networking and the online community and the fact of people who keep alive those things that they loved growing up and continue to be fans of. I've had people introduce me to their kids. I had a guy introduce me and say, when Transformers was on in the morning, this guy's the reason I was late for school every day. And when they were on in the afternoon, this guy's the reason I missed my last class in the afternoon.
Nice.
It's cool. It's all cool. It's great.
Now, do you have, one figure per every character you've done, or do you just have certain ones?
I have odds and ends. I'm not a collector. I'm kind of busy doing it.
Right.
But I had a Grimlock that I ripped back. I would say my eye-hand coordination is not good for transformable characters. I'm one of those guys that rips all the limbs off trying to make it transform.
Please tell me rip Grimlock's tail off.
Well, I didn't. But I stopped just short. If it fell to me to play all the games that I voice, I'd rather watch people play who know what they're doing.
Right. Yeah. All right, so the
also,
main reason...
If it ever falls to me to reinvent electricity, we're all going to sleep early every night. That's all. Thank God I can talk.
Ain't that the truth? So, the main reason we are here, because this podcast is, it's a Transformers review podcast where we, myself, Michael, and our other friend Steve... this was my first podcast that I started, and I went to review all 98 episodes of the G1 series. So that's what we're here for.
Very cool.
Did you audition for any other roles besides Grimlock, Longhole, and Skyfire?
Outback. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. Outback. That's right.
Yeah. It was Outback as well. I auditioned, I think, for everything I ever did. There were occasional, really peripheral characters per episode. that Wally would just sort of have little audition offs for in the booth. But I don't think anything was a given or a giveaway. I think everything was earned by everybody. And like I said, Wally was just like the height of integrity. And if he was putting his name on it, he was going to make everything the best it could be. I will put that animated feature way up on character delineation and characters that you can care about. And, you know, I just think they were very character-driven stories and story-driven characters. And I think that's, if you're trying to analyze and figure out why it has the longevity it has, I think that's probably the why, you know. And then there's some factor that nobody can account for, which is just that people loved it and held it close, and it meant something to them. And, you know, so bravo for that.
Yeah.
Nice. So speaking of Wally and Grimlock, how did you settle on
leader?
Nice. How did you settle on such a deep voice for Grimlock? And what was the process there of creating that voice?
I think, like I do with everything that I do, I really consider it all kind of a detective story, and you look for as many clues as you can get. And most of what I went with was increased aggression and increased muscular drive and decreased, not diminished, but sort of small brain, big muscle. And just that hinging of the jaws. And in the early episodes, I actually sort of restricted my jaws. So once it was coming from there, and I knew I was going to give myself a tonsillectomy every time we did a session, the rest kind of took care of itself. And I just at some point, you throw yourself into the character and open your mouth and see what happens. But I always wanted aggression to be out front, and I wanted that powerful jaw muscle to be hearable at all times. You know, that I was gifted with a lot of stuff, and just as an actor, your goal is always to sort of figure out something consistent that you can hold on to. And any voice actor who's lucky enough to have a character that sustains for that long, you're kind of obliged to just open the script every week and figure out where that journey is going for you, the character. And obviously they took me in a lot of different directions, and I tried to stay honest to all of them.
Huh. Well, Frank Welker had a throat ripping character voice, but I think Grimlock came a close second. That hurt a lot, right?
You know what? It's just like going to the gym and, you work your way up to the heavyweights, and you try. There are a lot of people, I think, who try to be protective of their voices. I'm kind of more of the opinion that once you understand that muscle, you really get better results if you just throw yourself in all the way and assume that you'll have some kind of innate protective mechanism. Yeah, you know, I was going to leave it all in the studio every time, and if that meant you know, lozenges and everything afterwards, so be it. I just wanted it to have the life that that thankfully it's had and has and continues to have. But I think I became a better actor and a stronger voice person and a stronger everything just having to find it every time for what I was doing. But yeah, it was a tonsil blower and a throat ripper, and I would always look at the glass between us and the producers and writers and say, are those my tonsils?
Well, with you know stickler for work and 12-hour sessions in those days, yeah, I could see why it would be a throat ripper and a tonsil blower.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
But you know what, it beats heavy lifting.
All right, so which is your favorite version of Grimlock, in season 2 where he was a badass, or in season 3 where he was more silly?
Me, Grimlock, kick butt. The white boy hit my nose. I found where it needed to go. Season 3, we all found it together, but I love butt-kicking Grimlock. I love the sort of looking over his shoulder at Optimus and thinking it could be maybe done a different way. And I think there was all kinds of stuff built into that batter ass side that just spoke to me. But like I said, I go along for the ride. You know, I buy my ticket like everybody else, and wherever it goes, my job is to make it go there honestly.
Awesome.
Very nice. So it was more of just toning down the aggression, or pretty much the same voice?
Well, yeah. Yes, and just letting it be driven situationally, and trying to make it stay true, including being gifted with a new brain and then opting to pass it on. But whatever's in the pages is kind of the gift that you're handed, and then it's your obligation to make it gospel and give it whatever it needs to get there. But there's also a whole host of people on the other side of the glass who are making decisions to make it fit the storyboard at the same time. So, you know, you go back and forth till everybody's happy, and that's when it's done.
See, Greg brings it every time. So I wanted to ask you about Simon Furman. Simon tends to include a lot of Grimlock in his writing. It's almost like a running gag in our podcast here. We always talk about Grimlock and Simon almost simultaneously. Have you ever met Simon, and did he gush like a fanboy?
We have had the good fortune of meeting at conventions all the way from here to the UK. And every time we became fast friends, like right away. We met at a BotCon, I believe it was in Chicago, and it was at least 10 years ago. And we stay in touch. We're really very kind of compatible as people. And he's the one who brought to my attention how much Grimlock history I wasn't aware of in my involvement with the animated series. But back to a lot of the book comic and a lot of actually intelligent, more intelligent Grimlock and still strong. Yes, he has an immense fondness for it. He's very, very, very complimentary of where I took it. And at a couple of conventions, he's actually written scripts that sort of take liberties with it. But I've been able to do Furman scripts at conventions, a lot of conventions at this point. But we always look forward to seeing each other. And he's another of these people with incredible integrity, great sense of humor, really bright, really funny, and really fun. Yes, I'm a huge fan of his, and I think it's mutual.
As are we. You know, we really dig him. But the you can see, like, in Fall of Cybertron, which we'll get to in a little bit, but you can see where that came from, you know, his earlier stuff that was published in the comic book form.
Yeah, I think it's all coming around, and it's all becoming sort of, I don't know, homogenous. There's a real sense of continuity in play here.
So we've all heard the Wally Burr session stories, but is there a story that you can tell us that we maybe haven't heard yet?
Wow, I don't know. I can tell you my favorite days were when Scatman Carruthers would bring his ukulele along and kind of hold court in the parking lot. And I think we got to know each other, the acting company, as people, because there were so many sort of breaks where they had to go over script revisions or relook at a scene or just sort of figure out what they were up to and needed in that session. So we all spent a lot of time together out in the parking lot or in the green room or wherever we were, and so that made for just a lot of getting to know each other time, and that was phenomenal. Let's see. Well,
I think a lot of people tell the the feedback story. We've heard that before about Frank doing the feedback and the sound engineer not knowing where it was coming from.
Frank can basically, if he's in a silly enough mood, make the entire studio start arcing and make sound engineers dive under the board and dive into the patchwork. He also, if he got bored, would start making pay phone calls to himself in the corner of the room, doing both sides of the conversation and the coins falling and the call connecting. And on at least one occasion, we heard a little air leak in the room and went on for sort of an interminable amount of time. And then ultimately, Frank put his finger up to his head and plugged the leak, and the air leak stopped.
Oh, man. I want to go back to something a minute ago. You mentioned, you know, regular Grimlock versus Grimlock having a brain. How did you go from the Grimlock we all know and love to, not that we don't dislike Grimlock having a brain, but walk us through that voice transition of the regular Grimlock to the voice that has the brain.
I'm not sure I can walk you through it, because I'm not sure, like I was saying earlier, that you can really analyze anything other than sort of turning the page when you're first reading a script and seeing, oh, I got to go there, huh? Okay, let's see how we're going to do that. And just kind of trying to create a transition from a more powerful, more aggressive to a more thoughtful and more intelligent. You just give yourself to it. And, you know, there are parts of this that are teachable and parts of it that are not teachable and not learnable. And that's just sort of that that leap of faith that you make in hopes that you're going to guess right. That's more true in video gaming voicing than anything else, because as a rule, you're in a booth all by yourself. You're kind of acting in a vacuum, and it's the director and the people on the other side of the glass who are kind of spoon feeding you the scene and the emotional level and who you're talking to and how it goes. But you're really having a conversation by yourself. And I'm not trying to change the subject, but a lot of this is just sort of an actor's trust in themselves and just sort of jumping there and knowing that they'll correct you if it's not ringing true and that you'll move on if it is ringing true. So yeah. I just take the script that I'm given as the place that I have to get to. That's my job. And if I mess it up, I'll be made aware of that. And if I do it right, somebody will pat me on the head and give me a gold star and pat me on the back and off we go.
Mm. Yeah. You know, video games, you know, and even before Fall of Cybertron, you've been doing Grimlock for different things, like you did it for a BotCon promo for this year. Mm. But specifically to Fall of Cybertron, what was it like coming back and, like, doing Grimlock again, seeing him in a video game versus the animation?
Well, I got to say, I think it's... if it's not one of my proudest moments, it's my absolute proudest moment. This is nuts, and this is fantastic. And a lot of this, even according to Hasbro and Activision, was fan demand and keeping hope alive, and it's phenomenal. I will say I dove in and had a fantastic time. F-A-N-tastic time. And I really feel the importance of all of the stuff I've been allowed to do. And now we're in the realm of things I'm allowed to talk about and not allowed to talk about. I'm at liberty to talk about my involvement and my pride and the awesomeness of the whole experience, but not specifics, because...
Well, we already know from
getting ready to launch
stuff like that online. We already know that Grimlock will have fire breath. fire breathing Tyrannosaurus Rex on Cybertron. That's just amazing.
It's all so cool and so exciting.
Space dinosaur. Oh wait, no, Mac Teeger always says space T Rex. He's a space T Rex. How cool is that?
It's pretty friggin' cool. Yes.
Well, as soon as we saw the E3 footage, the E3 footage actually included the voice. And uh-huh. I said, that's gotta be Greg Berger.
Cool. Yeah. I'm on cloud nine.
Very nice.
It's a Cybertronian phenomenon and it's great.
Cool. Speaking of Matt Teeger has said that Hasbro was going to abandon the Dinobots in their new consolidated Transformers mythology. And to hear Matt tell it, you know, it sounds like he kind of takes credit for saving the Dinobots and Grimlock in particular by writing a believable reason for the dinosaurs to be on Cybertron 4 million years ago.
Uh huh.
So, what's your take on this? What do you think about that?
It's outside my realm. I arrived in the mix after all of that had been done. I know that Aaron Archer from Hasbro and Matt, and I know that everybody was putting their heads together and trying to make this not trying, but allowing it to all work believably and all work realistically in the storyline. So that all predates me, but I'm the beneficiary of everything that they put their heads together and came up with, and I think it's gonna play like a dream.
I can't wait to play it. Actually, I only play games on the PC. I don't have a console at home, so I was really excited when Matt announced, I think via the Facebook page, that uh-huh. they were going to create the PC version after all.
Again, that's outside my realm. Yeah. I'm not sure about platforms or anything, but if that's the news, that's great news.
Yeah, no, I can't wait to play. It should be exciting. So transitioning again, are there any crazy off-the-wall behind-the-scenes moments you can tell us about the voice sessions for Fall of Cybertron?
I was alone in the okay. sessions that I did. So like most video game, interactive gaming situations, it's a really intimate relationship between both sides of the studio glass, because they kind of have to fill in all of the blanks. So it's an exercise in kind of closing your eyes and really getting the feel of where you are and the size of where you are. And obviously this is an All the Marbles epic battle. And so it was between me and the microphone for the most part. And I can't tell you crazy stories about it other than it was urgent and it was important and it was All the Marbles and it was totally fulfilling to me, and I wanted to make this everything it could be. I can't tell you I didn't take it personally. I took it totally personally. This was a crowning gig for me. I literally crowning.
King. So anyway, it would be really nice to see you do more Grimlock stuff in the future.
Well, here.
Cross the fingers.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about other voice actors. Who are some of the other voice actors that influenced you?
Dawes Butler. I mean, a lot of the classic voices are what influenced me. Dawes Butler and Mel Blanc and June Foray and more recently Peter Cullen and John DiMaggio and Dan Castellaneta. I mean, all people who I work with and work with fairly regularly. But I can't even tell you how phenomenal it is to just share waiting rooms and table reads and everybody's got a goofy funny bone, and you know, when all else fails, we go back to the script. But usually in ensemble reads and ensemble get-togethers, we're just allowed to kick it around until it's time to work. And you know, we're all readers, so tend to be kind of better read, I guess. The jokes are dirtier, and it's just everybody. I think because the voice has such a thumbprint to it, that everybody in the working tier kind of knows it could be anybody anytime, and you're all taking your best shot. You can't take somebody else's best shot. Either I'm still that naive, or it's just not competitive in the same way, because everybody's reached this level of being accepted in the community. And you know, at some point everybody got off the bus. You had to convince everybody every time, and to a certain degree you still do. But I just think it's a pretty copacetic community of people. I think we're all kind of always glad to see each other, and it just seems like everybody wishes each other the best going in, and whoever gets it is not necessarily at the expense of somebody else's talent. It's just whoever's most right for whatever's being done that day.
Right. Yeah, I'm a firm believer that those ensemble get-togethers should be like a pay-per-view event. We should all get to watch these.
You know, we just lost Ray Bradbury, and may he rest in peace, but there was an interview with him where he said people always say, when are you going to retire? And he always answered, he said everything I do is fun for me. Why would I retire from having fun? You know, if you love what you're doing, there's no real sense of needing to retire from it. It's what you do. It's who you are. And when I teach, which I do kind of irregularly, I basically say the same thing. If you're not bringing all of who you are to what you're doing, then you're cheating the audience and you're cheating yourself. You know, it's a big deal to be allowed to do what it is you love doing. And it's a big deal to be allowed to play, to be paid to play. Yeah. And you shouldn't take it for granted, and you should celebrate every time. I'm still, you know, Cinderella going to the ball every time somebody picks me, somebody plugs me into something. And, you know, it's there's a quote that says, the harder I work, the luckier I get. So, you can say you've been fortunate, but it also should mean that you put in the work.
You get out of it what you put back into it. You know, exactly. You made me think about something. You had mentioned a couple of times that you teach, and I wasn't aware of this. What can you tell us about how could I be in a Greg Berger class? There's a good question.
I was working through a place called Talk Shop LA and giving classes. At the moment, I'm trying to compress it into a more travelable format so that I could take it to some other cities and stuff, and do it in a more compact presentation. But the hard part is, and when I start my class, I say, do everything you do today as though someone decades from today might still remember it, because I'm here to tell you that's exactly how it has gone for me. And I talk about Transformers and G.I. Joe. The other thing is, I can't get anyone a job. I can't get anyone an agent. I can't further anyone's career. That's the part they have to do when they leave. What I do when I teach is basically, you know, set it up like Gold's Gym, and just I can promise students that they'll leave stronger, because we'll look for what their strengths are and we'll exercise those, and we'll try and expand parameters. And people that don't know their versatility, you know, every situation and every breakdown that you see in an animated series gives you clues. If you're really true to that mix of elements plus whatever the artist supplies you, of course you're going to come up with something new, because all of the elements that you're supposed to be mixing around are new. So, you know, even if it may be similar to something you've done before, it won't be the same, because no two characters are the same. Anyway, right. That's kind of the way we approach it. But I'm hoping to begin taking it on the road and trying to light some fires under people in other cities. You know, okay. And if it lights a fire, hey, go for it and don't let anybody stop you. But if someone can stop you, let them. Maybe it's not strong enough. Your strength and your belief in yourself will be tested every day. And if you're not willing to be the answer to people's problems and bring something to the party that's not already at it, then maybe you shouldn't go on. And if you are, and no one can convince you that you're not, maybe you're the guy or girl who should go for it, you know?
Nice. See, I can see you selling out some auditoriums on like a university roadshow type of situation.
That and my warm-up band. No.
Well, you know, we talked to Bob Skier, who did a bunch of writing for G.I. Joe and Transformers. Uh-huh. And he teaches at, I want to say UCLA. I forget. Uh-huh. But that was really interesting to hear from him because, you know, he teaches people how to do what he does. And
it's very cool. I am not doing it in an ongoing or academic environment yet. I may look at that someday, but then I'll have to grow a full beard and smoke a pipe and do a jacket photo.
There you go, with the patches on the sleeves.
Exactly, and wide whale corduroy pants and some kind of tweed jacket.
So that's funny. Speaking of writers, see what I did there. Have you ever seen something in a script that you would refuse to say?
Actually, I've kind of steered clear of some stuff just because I didn't feel comfortable. The thing is, everything that's recorded and everything that's filmed and everything that's everything is like forever in all formats now. And so I want to feel comfortable with everything I'm doing. And I feel there's things I feel stronger about and things I feel less strong about. I've been approached for some voiceovers for some political stuff that I've said no to because I don't want to influence anybody if it's something I don't feel that I can endorse or get behind. I want to have at least a point of view about everything that I'm asked to say, and I want to feel good about it. I want to be able to talk about it positively, but that's just me. I'm just, you know, terminally optimistic. I'm a positive person, and I don't want to soil it if I don't have to.
Right. So it's more of a political issue and not a, wow, this guy just said something really heinous and I don't think I should be voicing that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think you take everything and look at it, and if you can't feel comfortable about doing it, you know, don't do it. I think in the end it'll gain you more friends than it loses you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what do I know?
Actually, I was waiting for Mike to jump in there. I feel like I'm commandeering.
Well, it's fun talking. I'm having fun talking to you guys.
All righty. So you know what? You mentioned earlier about meeting Simon Furman at the conventions. You've been to a few of these conventions. What do you think?
You know what? It's not for everybody. It is for me. I totally dig the vibe. I really like the camaraderie. I really like the panels. I really like the sincerity of the questions. I've been approached by people that if I saw them in a back alley, I'd probably start walking a little faster. But when I've gotten to know them one on one at my table or in a panel room or whatever, you know, everybody's there for the same reason. Everybody's there for the love of the game. And I've met some terrific people, and I've had some terrific times. Now, having said that, whenever I get back from a convention, there'll be somebody in an audition or whatever that says, "Oh, that must be awful," and I say every time, I say, "Well, you know what? It would have been awful for you, but it was fantastic for me. I really like it. I've been afforded incredible travel opportunities, and I just have been." To be honest, kind of nicely pampered while I'm there, and it's all good. I'm doing my 13th consecutive San Diego Comic-Con this summer, and that's kind of the mother of them all.
Wow.
And it's just, it's nuts, but it's nuts in a good way. And the floor is incredibly cool, and most of the vendors all have something interesting and eclectic and quirky about them. And you know, that's what I look for. I look for the genuine originals in life, and a lot of them are in the convention circuits. So I love it. Plus, it really has afforded me tens of thousands of miles of travel and tens of thousands of fans one-on-one, maybe more than that. It's all good. And BotCon, which is specific to Transformers, and Auto Assembly, which is specific to Transformers, and TFCon in Toronto, they've all been just fantastic. Narrow cast, not so narrow, because there's so many incarnations of Transformers, but
right.
But huge assemblies of people with a real love and loyalty to the whole franchise.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to kind of wrap it up for us. Would you like to inform the fans of where they can interact with you online if they're, you know, I know you're on Facebook, but I don't know how often you interact with people on that. Do you do Twitter or anything like that online?
I haven't been Twittering, but Facebook / my name, GREGGBERGER. They can always find out, like I do, what I've been doing, what I am doing, and what I will be doing if they search my name at imdb.com. There is a gregberger.com website, and
I clicked on that a couple of times. It does not go to anything that has to do with you.
Really?
Yes, well, you need to look into that.
I will look into it immediately.
Yes.
Well, thanks for the heads up.
You're welcome. Before
a speed bump on the internet superhighway.
There you go. A speed bump that's like 5 feet high. Before we let you go, remind the listeners what you have coming up. We know Fall of Cybertron is going to be huge. Is there anything else that you've got going on that you want to tell the listeners about?
I have a very nice role in Resident Evil Raccoon City as Harley, and I have been allowed to make it known that I will be involved with Guild Wars 2. I can't say much more than that, but I'll be there. And like that, watch for all seasons of Transformers and G.I. Joe on the Hub and Men in Black. Watch for upcoming seasons of The Garfield Show. And life is good.
We'd like to thank Mr. Berger for taking the time to chat with us here in this TFG1 podcast interview. We'll ask you to hold the line, and we'll be back after this.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Me, Grimlock, kick butt!
No good dino, sweet dino, won't you step into the nice spaceship for blur? Pretty please, pretty, 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 please, nice dino. Good dino, with sugar on top and a cherry and some whipped cream. Nice dino, good dino, sweet dino.
Me, Grimlock, not nice dino. Me, best brains.
This reminds me of the battle on Alpha 9. The Petra Rabbits were... Grimlock, get your noodle out of my face.
Me, Grimlock, love Cubs war stories.
You're living one now. Engage the boosters for Cybertron's sake.
Tell Grimlock about Petro Rabbits again.
I'll give you Petro Rabbits.
Congratulations, Autobots, we've lost them. So rest while you can.
Yep, I remember the dust was so thick for Beta 4, you had to use windshield wipers on your optic sensors.
Me, Grimlock, know all about wipers. Want to hear good part of story?
Good part, Cup. Tell Swoop good part.
Okay. Well, the dust was really thick. And then this gigantic Ikyak came tromping and stomping down the mountain, flames spewing out of its nostrils. And I thought for sure...
Hey, Cup, don't you think we have better things to do now than tell old stories?
Like what?
Like maybe figure out how we're going to rescue our friends and then save Cybertron.
No! Tell story!
Shh!
Quiet!
Tell story!
We want to hear story!
Time out, time out, time out!
Me,
Grimlock, say you listening to the TFG1 podcast.
Me, Grimlock, need new strategy.
So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Oh my god.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
I really plodged when he went into Odie Barks. I was like, you know, it's just that simple thing. It's just that simple of a thing that it's like, wow.
You know what's weird is I've got a friend of mine who is the best man at my wedding. He's actually – he's married to somebody who has been a lifelong Garfield fan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very rare that I, you know, send her links to the podcasts that we do. But in this case – in this case, I think we have a new listener.
Yes, yes. But no, talking with Greg was so awesome. Such a great down-to-earth guy. Just amazing. It was so great talking to him. And we're going to keep the interviews going here on the TFG1 podcast, as many as I can get. You know, obviously, sadly, I don't think we're going to be able to get Mr. Welker or Mr. Cullen, but if we do, obviously, the listeners will know. But, I'm going to announce here and now, 2014, the 30th anniversary, TFG1 podcast is coming back, and we are redoing the entire G1 series. It's going to be done differently. It's going to be done not five episodes at a time. It's going to be a different format. It's still going to be us talking about each of the episodes. I believe it'll be myself, Michael, as always, Steve, you. Megatron, and Kevin, all four of us. I'm not sure if it's going to be all four of us on every episode. It might be three of us. It might be two of us. It just depends, because the way I'm going to advertise it is, hey, who wants to talk about these episodes? If everyone wants to talk about all of them, obviously it'll be all four of us. But no, we have a plan. TFG1 is making a comeback for the 30th anniversary.
Wow.
Yes.
That's exciting.
Yes. 2 years from now.
Oh, well, it's like 6 years from the original airing of TFG1 and 4 years after it ended completely, we're doing it again.
That's right.
It's like, what? Right. Oh, okay, yeah. This is where you put on your sunglasses and go, yeah!
Exactly. Rock yeah. out!
Exactly.
But no, thank you so much to Greg Berger. Greg is such an amazing guy. It was so great talking to him. I'm a fun time.
I'm so impressed with Greg. I've met him a couple of times at conventions, but again, this is the first time I've really got a chance to sit down and talk with him, and he's just such a good guy to talk with. Yes. Fanboy gushing. Oh,
yeah.
Stop it.
Yes, yeah. Stop it. All right, so that's going to do it for this interview here on the TFG1 podcast. We will catch you next time with whomever we're able to get next time. You never know. It might be Michael Bell. It might be Neil Ross. Anyone, well, not that that person had anything to do with G1. Anyway, all right, so for now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Michael Wilson.
Thank you for listening. Transform and roll out.
Podcast good.